This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and boy, do we have a legend in the publishing industry here today. His name is Walter Mosley, I'm sure you all recognize that name, and he's here to talk about his new ebook, Jack Strong, A Story of Life After Life. It's just out from Open Road Integrated Media, and you can get it at that site, and also on Kindle, I think, too. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good to talk to you. It's good to have you on the show. I saw you one time in Washington, D.C. on a golf cart, of all things, at the show they have there. That's the only time I've ever seen you. I never got to meet you that day, but I'm sure you remember that day.
Wow. I'm trying to remember being in a golf cart, but that's all right. I mean, you know.
It was right at the book festival they have there.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
And I saw you go by, and I didn't even, I said, that's Walter Mosley. It's one of those things where you feel like you've touched greatness, you know. There he is right there, you know. I've heard some, because you're such a, everybody knows you in the publishing industry. You've written a lot of books.
I have. I think I've published 47 books.
Are you really proud of that?
I think maybe I am. I think I am because I say it. So obviously you don't say things that you're not proud of now. But you know, what I like the most and what makes me the happiest is the process of writing. I just love writing. I mean, I'm always doing it. And, it really makes me pleased.
Right. And according to Wikipedia, you started writing at age 34. Is that correct?
I think, yes, around 34.
So I guess the question would be, why not before that?
You know, I mean, there's no reason. I think it took me a long time to figure out what I wanted to do. And even when I was writing, it wasn't that I figured out something I wanted to do. I figured out a particular thing. I wanted to be able to write a short story from beginning to end. And so I decided to start studying writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a notion that if I could write a short story from end to end, maybe I can get a couple of published, maybe I could teach writing, and after a whole long time, I could win like a pushcart prize or something. You know, I didn't have very high expectations, but I was really enjoying the writing, and so I thought maybe I would be doing that. Mm. I had no idea that I would like actually get published, like have books and stuff. That was a surprise.
It's amazing. I mean, you've had an incredible career, and you think about all the authors out there, and the chances of becoming as popular as you have become are pretty slim.
Yeah, it is. And that was never my goal. My goal was just to write.
Well, that's what makes you happy.
Yeah, because otherwise you get really sad, because if one thing is you want to finish the book, but then after you finish the book, you need to sell like a million copies, which I never have. Then, even if it's a wonderful book and you had a great time writing it, you'll still be unhappy at the end of it.
Mm.
And my whole idea is that, I'm writing these books and putting them out, and if I want to get rich, I'll go into real estate, because that's where you make money, not writing books.
Well, you're very realistic. I mean, you look at the authors that do make a lot, and there are, it seems like there's a lot of them, but there's also a lot of authors who never even get noticed very much.
Well, it's like actors, there's all kinds of stars, but for every star, there's at least 4,000 people who aren't making it. it's a number that big.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is, I'm in L.A. right now, and all you have to do is be, on the streets of L.A. and New York to meet all of the actors, all the good actors, who, for one reason or another haven't, crossed that border. Same thing for writers. There's a lot of wonderful writers.
So why an ebook now? Did they approach you about this, or was this your idea? I love this picture of Jack Strong with his blue. One eye is blue and one eye is red, it looks like there.
You know, what happened with me with Jack Strong is I just started writing it one day. I was in between books. There was no new novel that I could start and finish because I knew I had other projects coming up. And, you know, I've always been really interested in the Frankenstein story, but I wanted it to update it and politicize it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, creating a character like Jack, who's like an amalgam, not only, you know, in his body, but also in his brain, of hundreds, maybe thousands of different people,
mm-hmm.
different, you know, races and times, ages, genders, and he, in a way, contains all of that. And is at one point trying to realize himself, you know, who am I now? You know, I'm not the person who died, I'm somebody else. But, and how can I assuage all this pain in me from all these people?
Mm-hmm.
That seems to me like, very much the issues that Frankenstein faced, but in a kind of a modern tale.
So it's sort of like a science fiction story.
Well,
there's elements of that.
Yeah, it's definitely science fiction, but it's like, but in a kind of a passive way. It's like, you know, you're not in it discovering new, you know, theories or, you know, machines or stuff like that. The science fiction part has happened. It may happen time again if I keep on writing about Jack, but really it's just about the personalities and how they realize or don't realize themselves in this new form they find themselves.
Well, it's interesting. Some writers say that sometimes it's harder to write a short story than it is a novel. Do you find that too, or?
Well, it's definitely a fact. Ian Forster says that a novel is 50,000 words, more or less, of spongy prose. And I think that he's right about that. You know, it's like Egan said, well, the woman came in, she was wearing a black dress. Well, it doesn't matter. If it's a novel, who cares that she was wearing a black dress? You just keep on writing, and then this happens, and that happens.
Right.
If you're writing a short story and a woman's wearing a black dress, that black dress has to mean something. Either she's in mourning, either it's a little black dress and she's, you know, a maven of fashion. There's something, it has to have at least one more step of importance.
Mm-hmm.
And that alone makes the short story twice as hard, maybe three or four or five times as hard. Because a novel is a whole mountain that you can see. And a short story is like an island in the ocean. And you just know that there's a mountain underneath that island.
It's so neat to talk to you because you're such an intelligent author. I mean, I can tell just by talking to you how your intelligence is. I mean, and I think to a certain point you have to be pretty intelligent to write and to be as successful as you've been. I mean, you obviously know what you're doing. You obviously, and you're doing it for the love of doing it. You're not doing it, you know, just to sell books. You're doing it because you really enjoy it. It's really what motivates you to get up every day writing.
Well, yeah, and you can tell that you know, success as a writer is top on my list because I've written Jack Strong. You know, if I were to do it, every publisher has ever told me I would only write mysteries, and I would only write about E.Z. Rollins, you know, and that would be it, and that would be my niche in writing, and that would be, you know, my world. But the problem with that is if you do something like, I mean, some people, you know, I mean, listen, Rick Stout, he just loved Nero Wolfe. He could write Nero Wolfe forever, you know. And that's fine, you know, or Ross McDonald with, you know, that great, Lou Archer and those beautiful novels. But, you know, some people, you know, their minds are kind of all over the place. I'm like that. And I believe in the old fashioned writers, people like, you know, Charles Dickens and Mark Twain, who wrote every genre, and wrote in only in their own voice, but they wrote all across genres because, you know, that's what they were interested in. And, you know, I'm writing what I'm interested in. You know, I'm not expecting to write a science fiction book that's going to be a bestseller, but that's okay, you know, because I wrote a book that I liked, and it's going to help me write my next book.
With Jack Strong, I mean, are there people in this story that you have met or read about, or, I mean, where do all these characters come from? Are they just simply from your brain?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I find about writing, you know, anybody who's, like, listening to you who, you know, wants to be a writer, I find that if you write every day, that's like 365 days a year. Not for long, a couple hours, maybe three if you can do it. During the rest of that day, all these parts of your unconscious are excited. And they get more and more excited the more you write every day. And so after a while, all of these notions and ideas, characters, situations, plots, if you will, come out. Now, they are from someplace. I know. And do I know people like this? Probably. You know, how else am I writing about them? But I don't really have that I don't know. I've just written it, and I really enjoy it.
Right. I'm just curious. I guess when you're a reader, you always think, well, where do these ideas come from? Right now I'm reading the new Stephen King book, and I think to myself, boy, this man has a sick mind. You know, and I really, that thought goes through my head. It can't help it. When you read a book like that, it just seems like, boy, all these really weird thoughts that must go through his mind. I mean, what kind of a person is he? And you can't help it. You can't help but wonder that when you're reading a book, an author that you read a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. I'm sorry.
It's interesting, you know. It's interesting, and I don't know. I don't know what Stephen's writing practice is. You know, I don't know how he writes. I know that he has different kinds of writing he does, but he mostly stays, you know, inside that kind of quasi horror genre. It's not exactly horror. Sometimes it's a little science fiction, but there's also always like that kind of mystical moment, which. Mm-hmm. Which he does, you know, and that's, you know, that I think informs him, and it probably comes from a very early period in his life.
But to pick that brain, I mean, I think to myself, my God, I wish I could just have dinner with this man and ask him anything I wanted.
We all have that. I guess what I'm saying is we all have that brain. Mm-hmm. You might not come up with the same, if you're like, you know, doing that writing every day for 3 hours, you may not have come up with what Stephen King comes up with, but you'd come up with something just as interesting.
Right.
You know?
Are you always coming up with interesting ideas?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you know one that you can write a book about? I mean, does every idea become some kind of a book or story with you?
Well, not everyone, no. But, you know, I just keep on, you know, you keep on doing it. Some of them, you know, you like, some of them you don't like, some of them. You know, and I do, you know, and I don't just write books, you know, I write plays, and I write screenplays, and, you know, I write short stories at times. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that I do.
You're multi-talented, for sure.
Yeah, I know it's all writing, you know. And sometimes I'll start writing something and say, "Well, this would be a great television series. You know, this would be a really great movie, or this would be a great play." You know, I consider myself a novelist, so most often I'm looking for great books, you know. And but you know, sometimes it's something else if I do that.
Right. So whatever comes, I mean, you get these great ideas. It must be great. You sit at your house and you think, "Oh, that's a great idea. I can make a story out of that." And you just sit down and start doing it and see how it works.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then you find out what works. Like, my newest novel, the hardback novel is Debbie Doesn't Do It Anymore. And I got that from a title, you know. I said, wow, you know, Debbie Doesn't Do It Anymore. That's a really good title. I wonder what book it would be. It sounds kind of light and comical. So I thought it was going to be a comedy, but, you know, it turned out to be very dark, you know, when I wrote it.
Right.
You know, and which is another kind of interesting thing, you know, if you just, you know, follow your mind, you know. It takes you places, but you have to like exercise that mind in a certain kind of way.
And there's certain kind of dark elements in Jack Strong too. Just reading it, I think, well, it's a little bit dark, but it's interesting. You just don't know what's gonna happen, who he's gonna become next.
It's more kind of like an adventure, you know, and it's two kinds of adventure. It's a physical adventure in the world, you know, where, you know, he's pretty powerful, like Frank McDonald, and he's, you know, and he's very smart, and he has a lot of stuff in his history. But then there's an internal thing, you know, like wherever it all, every once in a while somebody steps up and says, I need to take over now. And that, you know, it might be a woman, it might be a man, it might be a murderer, it might be a racist, it might be, you know, it could be somebody who's insane. You know, there's all kinds of different sides to him. And this, you know, allows him, and I think hopefully the reader, you know, to identify, you know, with different kinds of personalities that you might find anathema. You know, often you'll write about a bad guy, and then it's just the bad guy. He's doing these bad things, and you have the good guy over here, and the good guy's doing these things, and the good guy defeats the bad guy. But what happens when the good guy becomes the bad guy?
Right.
Just for a moment. Like, you know, just for a day. Just for an hour. Just, I need to get into this place. The only person who knows how to get in this place inside me is the bad guy.
Right.
You know?
It's like meeting...
Follow that.
Yeah, and you—it's like walking down the street. You meet all these different people, and you don't know their background. I mean, some could be a serial killer, some could be, and they could be anybody. They could be.
Like, that's the thing. Like, it's not like, oh, I might meet them. You have met them, you know, and like, but you know, you didn't know. They didn't tell you. You didn't know it. It's okay. It's cool, you know. But if you switch that around and said that walking around the street is actually just being in my own head, so all of that's in me. Then you have Jack Strong. You know, in the same way that Frankenstein had, you know, a hand from this guy and an, you know, and a biceps from that guy. You know, Frank has that, but he also has this internal thing going on where he has a piece of this guy and a piece of that woman and a piece of this, you know, person. Some people that he hates, you know, and there you are. That is a, that becomes, for me, what I think a modern Frankenstein would be. And of course, you know, he's been developed by the government, so the government has its part in it, you know, and other people have their parts in it. So, you know, if I continue with the series, which I would like to, the only problem I ever have with writing is I never have enough time. You know, as much as I write, there's that much more time I need. And I really can't write longer than 3 hours a day. After 3 hours, I have to give up.
Too much?
Everything I write after 3 hours, the next day I throw it away.
Really? Interesting. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, after 3 hours, I learned this in the beginning. I was writing, I was trying to say, well, I'm going to write more. I'm going to write 5 hours a day, 6 hours a day. You know, some writers tell you they do that, and I believe it. But when if I write 5 hours, everything I wrote up to the 3 hour mark is great, as far as I'm concerned. And then after that, that's bad stuff. Throw it away.
How fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating. And it's been that way since you were 34? I wonder why that is.
I think that the level of your brain, my brain, it's fatigue mark around there, you know.
Well, at least you know your limits. You know what you have to. I mean, yeah. Some people go beyond their limits. I mean, I work with people who, you know, will fall asleep at their desk. They're just doing too much, and they don't, you know, and a lot of times it's for the money. You know, they need the money. They can't go home. You know, they can't just go home when they're tired because they're financially strapped, but I mean that's the kind of world
America,
we're living in.
Well, that's America, you know, and that, you know, it's America, and America is the world in a certain kind of way. That, you know, that everybody is, you know, defined, you know, by their labor, but the definition is like it's kind of a replaceable thing. You know, you could be you, it could be somebody else. You know, I remember when I was a kid and John F. Kennedy was killed, and I was broken hearted as a little kid, and we all loved John F. Kennedy, and I was broken hearted, after 2 days, and also I was a kid, and the only thing on television was the assassination, so that was really, you know, I couldn't bear it, I couldn't watch television, which was like a withdrawal from it. But one day I'm looking at the TV, and there's like a big tall guy standing next to Jackie Kennedy, and his hand, the right hand is in the air. And I said, Dad, who's that? And he said, that's the president, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And I said, no, Dad, Kennedy was the president.
Right.
He said, and the minute that man died, this man became president. I was so stunned. I said, that fast? And my father just snapped his fingers like that. And I went, wow. So that means that any labor, anything I do for the world, it's not for me that I do it for the world, is replaceable. And it's replaceable, you know, spontaneous.
Yeah.
You know, you fall down and another person appears. And I think that that's one of the things about, you know, working for something outside of your own desires. If you're not working for yourself, you're not going to be happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, yeah, and it's really hard because everything you learn tells you the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. And being happy, I mean, everybody's working so hard nowadays just to support their families that do they even have time to be happy anymore? I mean, do they even...
But it's really, even when you're doing that, it's important to remember that there's something else going on. I think that what you're saying is absolutely true. If your family's hungry, you got to feed them. If you're hungry, you got to pay the rent, you got to pay the mortgage, blah blah blah. But two things. Number one, you have to remember this is me giving away everything that I am, and I don't get anything in return for it because whatever I get in return, we use up. We pay for rent, we eat for food, we use water, electricity, whatever.
Right.
You know. So there's that. You know. And the other thing is to wonder, well, how come I live in a society that's so rich and so powerful and so wonderful, and I don't have time? You know, it's my labor that builds this powerful, you know, superpower America. How come I'm not sharing in the benefits of what I've done? Yeah, it's a good question to ask.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, you're still doing Easy Rollins. You're still going to do that series?
I just finished a new Easy Rollins called Rose Gold. I think I got a good review on PW yesterday. I haven't seen it, but that was good.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Coming out about 7 months. And then I'm at the moment, I'm writing, and I'll finish pretty soon, the new Leah McGill.
Wow. So you're busy. Is Easy Rollins still that much fun to write?
Oh, I love writing about Easy. Yeah, Easy and Leah, they're such different characters in such different places. It's a lot of fun.
Well, where did the name come from? Easy.
Which one?
Easy Rollins.
His name is Ezekiel, right? And he lived... You know, in the black world, you know, and not necessarily the black world, but in the any poor world, you know, there's a lot of irony, right?
Oh, yeah.
So here's Easy. He's living the hardest life. He's been an orphan since he's 8. He's been on his own. He's been having to fight for his existence almost his entire life. And so they call him Easy.
Interesting.
You know, it's like, yeah, right. Easy. It's like a joke. So yeah, his life is easy. Or, the most deadly man that Easy or anybody else has ever met, Mouse, they call him Mouse. He's, you know, his name is Raymond. But they call him Mouse because, you know, one, they like him, and two, because he's the opposite of a mouse. He's really a tiger, you know, but they don't call him that.
But you seem, and from what you've been saying, it's you just enjoy doing different things. I mean, if you only were writing Easy Rollins, I don't think you'd be as happy.
Oh, the books wouldn't be any good. I mean, I would stop writing good books, you know, because, you know, how many stories can you tell about one person? And why are you telling them, you know? Like, is the only thing going on in my head is other guy? Like, it would be weird.
Yeah.
You know? But there are all kinds of stories that writers say. And when you look at the old writers, when you look at Balzac and Zola and Dickens and Twain and, you know, Cooper, and really, they're all these writers who go from one idea to the next.
Right.
And it's, you know, because what you're doing is, you're trying to, in a way, at one cultural moment, map out the limits of the imagination of that culture as far as you can. You know, nobody's going to succeed in doing it, but you do it as far as you can. And if everybody else is doing it, but if you make the mistake of, you know, treating it like a job and you specialize, you only write Easy Rollins, well, your limitation is going to be fantastic. Like, for instance, Easy deals with race. Yeah. All the time, because he lives in a time in Los Angeles where if you would walk outside of your neighborhood, the police are going to stop you.
Wow.
You know, and if you say anything, they're going to beat you. You know, I mean, that's still somewhat true, but in a world that Leonid McGill lives in, race comes up, you know, I don't know, maybe every 100 pages or so. But it's not a big thing because he lives in a world where race is not the major issue in every single black person's life. And so that, you know, so you, there are different kinds of stories perceived in different ways through different eyes.
Right. And you look at today with social media and people online saying things that are just, wow, why are they even saying stuff? Like, why are they exposing themselves online? People seem to want to pour their heart out online, and it's like, I mean.
Well, you know, I think you already gave the reason for that when you say your friends are working until they fall asleep at the desk. It's like they have no life. All of their life has been given to this, you know, as Tennessee Ernie Ford used to say, the company store.
Yeah.
You know, I owe my soul to the company store. So I think that the desire, like, to be, like, you know, on Twitter or, you know, or Instagram or Facebook, whatever, is you want to be important.
Yeah.
Who you are, what you see, how you do things, and because there's so little time to do it, and computers are so fast, you know, well, I'll take 15 minutes a day and I'll build an identity for myself.
That's
what people do.
There's such a youthfulness about you. I mean, even though, you know, I know
even
you're...
Even though I'm old.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to say that, and when I offend you, right? But you just have some, there's so much vitality just talking to you. I just feel a strength in you that's wonderful. I mean, that you have a lot more to do.
You know, when I was a kid, I lived in Vermont, and I had a friend named Bob Bagwell, who's this brilliant psychiatrist, and he had a farm. I used to work with him on his farm, And we drove through tiny towns in Vermont. This was back in the 70s. And one day I remember he said, look at that, Walter. In a corner where there were 8 men, the youngest one was maybe 12, the oldest one was probably 90. And they were talking. And they were sharing ideas and stuff like that. And they all had the same level of excitement. Because in that rural culture at that time, and maybe still today, everybody was a member. And so it wasn't like, you know, youth or age, you know, there might be somebody who doesn't know everything yet and somebody who knows a little bit more, but they were sharing it and laughing and joking. And I think that's part of that. Well, when you belong to a world, it's a possibility. Again, I think that people on Twitter and Facebook and all those things are trying to recapture that kind of almost racial memory of being a part of a group.
And you don't find a lot of people over 50 and 60 who are on Twitter. I mean, some there are some, but you find the majority of the young people.
Yeah, well, a lot of them are on Facebook. There are a lot of grandmothers on Facebook sharing pictures of their grandchildren, sending out pictures of their vacations. And they, you know, a 60-year-old woman has 160 year-old friends, maybe all over the country, because if you're knitting, that's a thing that you might be interested, or if you're doing, some kind of, glass work or whatever, you share that with people. And I know a lot of people. I know a lot of men and women in their 50s who are on Facebook.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I mean, I do have a Facebook place, but it's more like, for my books and stuff. But, I think that there, it's, young people do it more, and they're always doing something new. I mean, every month they're doing something new. But, when it gets codified, old people,
I think you hit the nail on the head, though, as far as people wanting, people almost want to be famous, and they feel like if they're putting stuff online, that a lot of people are seeing it, so they're almost famous. I mean, and you look at, there's a lot of people today that have become famous from being online.
Yeah. Well, it's not that many. Comparatively, there's only a few people who've become famous. But I think that it's not really fame that people want. People just want people to know that they're there. They want to exist. And, when you look at television and, all these other, forms of media, it seems like the only people who are, who have importance, who are, are famous people, so they want that. But, if you can get another way, some of the time I'd rather get famous instead, but over here you could have love instead. It's, okay, I'll take that. Yeah.
So are you going to be writing more things like Jack Strong?
Well, I've written quite a few books of science fiction. I think 12. And yes, I'll be writing more. I have one coming out, at Christmas called, I think it's Christmas or maybe just after, called Inside a Silver Box.
Mm-hmm.
Another science fiction book that I wrote. And, I'm not thinking about anything beyond that, but, I'm sure I will.
But you're always thinking, though, on the same level. You're always thinking about something, obviously. You have a lot of things going through your mind. And obviously.
Well, I'm a writer. It's the thing. It's really funny, like when you finally have an identity in labor. Oh, I'm a writer. It's like a guy who might be a blacksmith. So, are you going to make any more horseshoes? He says, well, as long as there's horses.
Right.
I'll probably be making horseshoes, Even today, you got, people who put shoes on horses because there's still horses and people still riding them.
Right.
And so to have that identity, to say I'm a, if you tell me you're a writer and you don't write, I wouldn't say anything if you said that, but I would think, well, you're not writing, so you're not really a writer. You were a writer. You may one day be a writer again, but you have to be doing that thing in order to be that.
So what thrills you besides writing? Are there other things that thrill you in your life?
Well, I have a gigantic comic book collection.
Oh, really?
And I do love comic books. I think that they're wonderful. And, I love all the music I loved when I was a kid, and I have friends that, that I like very much, and and I'm enjoying, right now I'm in L.A. I'm working on, a couple of television shows and a film. And it's fun to do work, do that kind of work because it's collaborative. I went to have a meeting yesterday with some people about a pitch that, the people are going to pay for me to go do this pitch to these other people to see if we're going to do these stories. And, I gave them the pitch and they said, okay, now this is how you need to fix it. And, that's different. Because as a writer, people don't say that stuff to me. Just me doing it. And it's kind of fun to have somebody else there.
Anything you can tell us about that we'll see on TV that you've written?
Oh, I don't know if we'll see it. This is a thing called Ceasefire. It has to do with, the organization of the Interrupters in Chicago. People trying to work against gun violence, I've been working on that. I've been working on a thing called Parishioner, which is a book that I wrote. It was an e-book, actually. It's a kind of a dark, crime fiction genre about a church of evil. I've been working on an idea, a short story with Ron Howard's company, Imagine. A story I wrote called Reply to a Dead Man about an organization that delivers messages from people after they die.
Wow.
They're different, different ideas, really, I don't expect any of them to work. I'm working on them. What happens.
It's great that you're so busy. It seems like you're busier now than you've ever been.
You know, I, it seems like seems like that to me too. Every day I wake up and I went, wow, I'm doing more stuff than I did when I was 25. Because, you know, when I was 25, I didn't do anything. You know, I just had fun. I was, and really, I'm so glad. When I remember that time, I said, God, you know, that was a great period. I had no responsibilities. I just had fun. And the idea that, you know, I think one of the big problems in cultures like this today is that young people feel that they have to be a success before they're 30.
Yeah.
You know, whatever success means. And, you know, the idea is like, well, when you're, because there's only one time you get to be young and really enjoy being young.
Right.
And, you know.
Exactly. I mean, life just passes by so quickly. I mean, before you know it, it's 2 hours later and we're, you know, and it's amazing how fast time flies.
Oh my God, really. And when you get much older, before you know it, you turn around and say, well, honey, remember we did that last summer? And she goes, no, that was 10 years ago, dear.
Yeah, exactly. That's scary. It really is scary sometimes.
And you go, what happened? It feels like it was 1 year. It's like, you know, you feel really bad. You know?
Or,
but
you
think one of the things, if you keep busy, it's less. I mean, it doesn't go away, but I think it's less if you're busy, which is why I don't feel like that, because I'm so much doing things that, you know.
I mean, when you think, and writers retiring, I mean, Stephen King said he was going to retire. He never retired. He's writing more than he's ever written. And can you ever retire from something you enjoy that much?
I'm not sure that all writers enjoy writing. I know Stephen King has to because of what he does. I do think he has some trouble with his vision, though, which might be part of it. But,
oh, really?
But a lot of writers, they don't like writing. You know, because if you get caught up in the economic part of it, where, you're only going to be happy with a book if you're number one on the bestseller list, or if you made more than $4 million, or if, you got reviewed in a really positive way in the New York Times, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, if that becomes your goal, you know, as you become older, people pay less attention to you. That's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people come up to me all the time and say, I thought you were dead.
Really?
They do it. I go, wow, man. You know, I guess that's because my first books were in the 40s, and they thought that maybe I was born then or something. But,
so you get noticed a lot. I mean, people recognize your face.
I get noticed some, which is kind of wonderful, you know. I used to know Gregory Hines when I lived in New York, and every once in a while we'd walk across the village together. He'd get stopped 100 times. 100. Now, I'm not making that up.
Wow.
And I would say, wow, that's really terrible. Now, I walk across the village, you know, like 3 days in a row, and two people recognize me. That's great.
Just the way you want it.
Well, that's perfect, because you're not completely anonymous. But then you aren't spending all your time, you know, dealing with, you know, abstract issues being, you know, foisted upon you.
You can only imagine what it's like to be like Justin Bieber or Lindsay Lohan, who get recognized everywhere they go by everybody.
Oh, God. Imagine you can't go to McDonald's, right? You know, it's like, because you'll never get out. All these people will be grabbing you and holding you and like, well, I love you, and you're like, ah, can you, you know. No, and it's just, that's fame, you know, and
Fame's a funny thing. It can do so many things to people. I mean, you make people that would normally be just a normal everyday person, they make them crazy. I mean, if they don't know how to deal with it.
It depends on who they are. Gregory handled it so well. It was like, he was one of the most wonderful people I ever know. And I said, Gregory, how do you stand this, man? And he said, Walter, all you have to do is keep on walking. They want to sign something. They want to kiss. They want to tell you something, answer something. Just don't ever stop walking. And he had a big smile on his face when he said it. And we just kept walking. He never stopped. People would say, well, hey, let me ask you. And he said, well, you have to walk with me if you want to ask me a question. Because I'm going somewhere.
That's interesting.
And it was wonderful. It never bothered him. You know, I know other people that their face would just turn sour when people would walk up to
them. Right. And you don't want to be that with your fans there. I mean, I guess people don't care. Some people don't care, but I mean, you want to be as nice as you can, but it's hard. It's really hard if you're, you know, you want to be private. You don't want people to bother you, and yet.
Yeah, you want to be nice, but when you're sitting down, you know, with your family and somebody comes up and says, come over here and pose for pictures with me, you have to say, no, I'm not going over there. But then you can't go to regular places. You have to go to places where you're protected, which is, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want that. That doesn't seem worth it. You know, but I do. You know, I like writing. I like being recognized now and again. You know, I like my life. It's really a lot of fun.
And you're having a good time doing it all. And we should let you go because I'm sure you have lots of work to do. But it's been absolute. Well, you must. Just listening to all the stuff that's going that you're doing. You've got to be a busy guy today. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And let's talk about the ebook again. Is called Jack Strong: A Story of Life After Light. It's available from Open Road Integrated Media. I want to make sure I get that name right. On their site, it's also an ebook. I think I saw it on Amazon too. You can get it on Amazon.
Oh yeah, it'll be everywhere. You know, everywhere you can get an ebook, you can get this book. Yeah.
Right. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice talk to you.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connolly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.